Blog Talk Radio.
I'm going around the horn. Make your gun or goes based on the data you had printed LOS. I see we got it back. Give you another few seconds.
We're going fine.
Okay, retro. Go. Fido.
Go.
Guide.
Go.
Control.
Go.
Telcom.
Go.
GNC.
Go.
Econ.
Go.
Surgeon.
Go.
Capcom. We're go to continue PDI.
And it's Sunday night here on Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio, and we've got Lillian Caldwell on her second visit with us here this evening. I'm already ahead of myself, already jumping ahead of my voice. Oh my God! Hear music out there. Let's see if I can talk to myself. I'm a little tired from yesterday. Long investigation.
Coming to you live from the Haunted Studios in Shingle Springs, California, this is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio with your host, John Almada.
Almada. God, it's two of you talking. Anyway, tonight we're going to have Lillian on. I think I see her dialed in out there, and we're going to be having her on for the second time here on the show. And she's a pretty interesting lady. Has a long history with the spiritual things happening to her, and writes paranormal teen fiction, and has had quite a long and illustrious career in radio and things like that. She's been an instructor in the Long Story Short School of Writing and teaching several courses in interviewing, pre-marketing plans for books, internet talk radio and podcasting, and much, much more. She also mentors teenagers in writing their first novels. So we're going to be talking with her about all things and everything in between since we had her on last time. We'll get into that here just very shortly. I wanted to talk a minute about yesterday's investigation at the Black Cavern or Black Chasm Cave Complex out in Volcano, California. I'm going to go ahead and post a link out here for you guys that are interested. And let's go ahead and get a list out there of all the folks that are dropping in for tonight on this Sunday. Got Anastasia is with us. Kathy's Distant Echoes, hello, my dear friend. And Fire Witch is with us, and she's going to bless the show as she always does. I hope. And we've got Hopi 66, Pamela M. Quinny is with us, and we have Rob, and RT Lampwork is with us. And then for all you lurkers out there, I know you're there. So good to see you guys. And let's see what a little bit about this Black Chasm investigation. It turned out last year, I did an experiment where we were trying to find out if we could screen out EVPs by going into an open underground location that was relatively safe. So we decided, since we were in Volcano, we've had other paranormal investigations in that town, we'd swing in and take this $14 tour of this beautiful cave complex, the Black Chasm Cavern. And I thought, we're going to get no EVPs out of there. And I came home, and I had some pretty wild stuff that we got down in this cave complex, down about 275 feet, I think, is the low point at the current moment of where you can go. It goes back much, much further. And these caves are all up and down that part of the Sierra. So there seems to be this huge underground complex that goes for many miles, that much of which is unexplored and never has been seen before. It has some of the most interesting formations in the world of different kinds of different. They're not quite stalagmites. These things actually grow sideways. They kind of counter gravity, and it's a complex phenomenon. But only 5% of the caves in the world have these formations, and I got to see those. But we actually did the first ever paranormal investigation of this particular site. And just the short story before we do our official analysis of the data, because we have video, audio, and a lot of photos to go through. We did hear something responding back to us by voice. Three of us heard that, and the fourth person was on the fence about it, but it was really interesting to hear some of these responses. There was a lot of feeling of being watched by someone, and we also had two of us had sensations of being touched. Another person in the group was convinced somebody was standing behind him and turned around and there was no one there. So definitely I think we got some things. We also walked through some of the old 1850s settlements out there where there had been some families that had lived up above that particular cave complex. And in the town of Volcano, and it was interesting to say the least. We heard some more voices talking, both myself and Renee, and I think our host also heard something. So three of us heard that. It was a very productive case. We also did a lot of physical exertion. So I am before you guys tonight. I'm not my usual self. I don't have all the abundance of energy that I normally would, so I apologize ahead of time. I'm just kind of coming into this going, okay, I'm going to do some stuff tonight. And I see, I see my good friend Judith is out there listening in. Hello, Judith, we see you. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and bring in Lillian and see how she's doing. And I also found I had some Gmails from her. I'm going to apologize on air to her because she sent me some stuff and I never got to them and I never responded. So I'm feeling bad. Anyway, I've been really busy lately. But I will say one thing too. I am very blessed and give thanks to my very dear friend Renee Martine on our team has stepped up as case manager. And I'm finally getting actually some help with all this enterprise we call GRI. It's been a long, lonely road alone, so I've been getting a lot of communications with people coming back and wanting to talk with me and doing different things. And now it's actually starting to get a little easier to do all this. And so you should see some improvements in my responses. So for those of you who think I'm not paying attention, it's not because I'm not able or not wanting to. It's because sometimes I'm just not able to. So anybody who's running a group like this and doing the things we're doing knows what I'm talking about. So anyway, we are going to go ahead and pop on this hand that is up from area code 734. And let's see who we have here. Is that Lillian?
Yes.
Hello. How are you, dear?
I'm doing pretty good. How you doing?
Been out hunting ghosties and I worked my butt off yesterday.
Did you scrape some butt as well as work it off?
Actually, we did scrape a lot of things. I took a nice shot in the arm from something that got a hold of me and decided to clip me. We crossed actually a stream. It's a first for GRI. We were we looked really rather comical crossing a stream. And I'm glad I did not see the dead deer that was floating in the stream that we crossed right next to me. I was told about it later.
You're not going to let a little dead deer upset you. I mean, in front of my house, we find several dead deer, well, roadkill mostly, and we have to go out and call up the local police and say, oh, we have some roe deer. Do you want to just stop and butcher it and give us the meat, or shall we give the meat to the homeless? What are we going to do now?
Well, I noticed the vultures. That was the thing. I was going, this is an auspicious sign. We're out hunting ghosts, and these vultures are hanging around, and I'm thinking, you know, I'm looking around, and I just, you know, normally I'm pretty observant, but I've been worked through, you know, we've been really put through it that day. We'd hiked a long ways. It was truly, this is our normal sort of investigation. We don't do a lot of the indoor hunts and things like that, but it's been, you know, it's been a long winter, and it's our first outdoor case where we really got everybody out there and started, you know, flipping our butts around, and, you know, I wouldn't have been freaked out if I'd seen it. I would have said, oh, my God, don't go there. But it was just, you know, later on we got onto the other side and we went through a bunch of blackberry brambles, and that's where I think where I got scraped. And
yeah, they have a tendency to attach themselves to clothing.
Yeah, we found that out. But what was interesting was in the town that we went through, this old part of Volcano, California, just amazing, you know, artifacts were there. And you felt presences around you, and we definitely heard some things, and I'm sure we got some great EVP. So it was a preliminary assessment mission to just see what we think, and we're very lucky because the cavern tours that had us there has several other places that we may, you know, very well get into, all of which I believe has some sort of you know, activity reports. So. We're, you know, the cave we went into was not reputed to be haunted, and yet I caught the first evidence last year.
Well, caves are not so much haunted as sometimes they're portals.
That I would agree with you on. I think that there's something else going on there. It was interesting to get a response. You know, we actually called down. We were on the second level of this particular cave, and we actually got for about 3 minutes, we were getting vocal responses when we were calling out, and then it just suddenly disappeared as quickly as it came. What's your thoughts on portals? I mean,
I've been doing a lot of investigations into portals because my two novels that I've been working on, one I'm finished, but I use a portal in that scene, in that book, and then my second one, which is I've done a lot of research into the Mesoamerican Indians and their cult of the dead. And they have sacred caves that are used as portals. And, of course, if you follow, I also invested in picking up a copy of the Pupova, which is the Mayan book of the dead and dawn of life, the glories of gods and kings. And they very much believe that there are sacred caves that do reach down into the underworld. And, of course, they also believe that there are two different parallel worlds, the world in which man lives, which, of course, is the dream world, and the real world, which runs parallel to it. So I very much believe in portals, and I think that they do exist. And you have to have a certain sense of about them, of what they can do, because it's not just letting in evil spirits or good spirits, but I believe that it can let you into past civilizations as well as into future civilizations.
So you mean it's like almost like a time portal in that sense,
and
too?
A time portal, yes. If you do any reading among the Mesoamerican Indians, they very much believe that that is exactly what it is, that it will take you from one world to another.
You know, it's funny that you bring up the Mayan civilization, because I just saw this morning, I had just gotten up and was having coffee, and I spent an hour watching an interesting special, I think it was the History Channel, talking about some interesting stuff going on with the Mayan civilization in 2012, and it correlates with what you're saying about their idea of the world, the other world, the real world, because evidently the theory was from the Mayan civilization itself that we walked in this dream world, but under our feet and in the mirror image was this other reality that they really came from.
Yeah.
And you would go
from this world to the next. So it's not so much that it's the end of what you know, but you go one giant step forward.
Yeah. It just it struck me, and what was really interesting was to see how much of the Mayan civilization remains undiscovered. Evidently, there are a lot of these pyramid structures, which are just huge, these huge cities that they built in their various ages, and of which we're almost at the end of the fifth age, or the 13th, Baktun, I think is what it's called, the 13th tomb.
Not only are there a lot of giant pyramids up above the ground, but they have whole cities below that run throughout the length of the Amazon.
Yeah.
That traverse from one side of South America to the other side, goes up through Central America and pretty much goes underneath. And so I find that fascinating, that these were places where they went down to worship and to get closer to their gods. And so there are whole cities just set up where the people actually went down below to conduct their activities as well.
What do you think, you're saying that they had underground connectivity going, between cities? They actually had tunnels?
They have, some of the research that I have done says that there are avenues of payment, similar to the kind of pavement that the Romans made with all the stones when they would pave out the boulevards for their armies to cross. That's why they had such a mighty empire, because their roads were paved across wide enough for their whole army to march through. Well, apparently the same thing goes for these underground cities, that there are paved roads that one follows and takes you from city to city.
Now, that says something, because it's funny. I did get to see, and I was aware they were a very competent civilization, but I didn't realize how big they had gotten. They actually expanded all the way up into Ohio at their northernmost point, all the way down through pretty much the whole of South America, had quite sophisticated vessels. When Columbus actually got to the New World, I think it was Columbus, he noted in the log that they had sailing vessels that were twice the size of his in length, carved out of a single tree.
Yes.
And you're talking, too, about a civilization that had the sheer amount of people in the cities actually were far more than anything in Europe or even in Roman, old Roman times.
Had a sophisticated irrigation system as well. They had tears of the land and they irrigated that. And this is a civilization that didn't use the wheel. Think of that.
And their ability with that astronomy was unparalleled. I don't think any other civilization came close to them in terms of their accuracy with astronomical observations. It was just really interesting to see that they invested literally lifetimes of effort in observing, transits of Venus, knowing more about the galactic center, how that all operated, and they had really gotten to know cosmology very well and had a pretty, an almost 21st century understanding of the cosmos. A remarkable people. The more I look at this, I'm not surprised that they would know something was coming. And now there's some really interesting theories that say that the whole 2012 thing is really about disturbances at the center of of our galaxy with the black hole there, creating these energy disruptions that will culminate at the end of the fifth age, which means that we could be in for some interesting times.
Well, I think we should be in for some interesting times anyway, because the galaxy, as we know it, is continually expanding and continually growing. Planets are formed and other planets go dead, or they explode, or there are meteorites that come in and plunge into planet Earth. What I'm interested in is when all the space garbage that has been orbiting our planet starts falling out of the sky.
Yeah, I you know what's interesting is that's actually been a subject of concern. I mean, I'm in the business of, you know, building the engines that we launch this stuff, and NORAD has very sophisticated radar capabilities. They can see down to, I think, the size of a small screw, you know, of different, you know, space junk that comes in, and they're tracking just, I think if you go out on the web, if somebody were to go out and look out on Google, you'll find a page that shows just how many objects they're tracking. And what's really disturbing was, you know, several years back, the Chinese government decided to do a demonstration of their sophistication with anti-satellite weapons, and they blew up an old satellite of theirs, which unfortunately made the problem of the space junk a whole lot worse. And so space is becoming a place for warfare, if not already. And, you know, you're right on the money. I mean, that kind of thing is becoming a worry.
Instead of having cats and dogs coming down and pelting planet Earth, we'll have plummeting satellites and warheads.
Yeah, it's actually a big problem. It's very rare for meteorites to actually land and hit anything that on the ground that would be you know, of a human construction, but it has happened. There's a famous, I think, 1970s or 80s era car that's worth a lot of money because a meteorite smashed through the back trunk area of the car. There's also a woman that was hit by a meteorite that actually landed and went through the roof and hit her on the side, and she recovered fully from it, but left quite a mark on her.
I bet. You know, there's a new type of ice formation now because of global warming that is now forming in the atmosphere, and it's so big that every now and then they come down. They're large enough as basketballs, apparently, and they'll come crashing down through your house without anybody being the wiser.
Yikes.
It's a new type of ice ball that is now forming because of the moisture rising and the coolness coming down, and they have a new name for it, and apparently some lady was sitting in her living room when it came through the roof, and practically it tore down her whole roof and destroyed her house.
Oh, my God.
So now only do we have to look out for dogs, cats, and parts of a satellite and space junk, but we can now be struck by a ball of ice the size of a basketball. And if that's not worse, then we have the floating garbage city in the middle of the Pacific Ocean that apparently is as large as 2 football fields now, and that's the accumulation of all the junk that has been discarded into the sea.
Yeah,
so pick your poison.
You know, I don't know. I'm at the point now where I was talking with my mother about a lot of this same kind of thing, and she laughed and said, "You know what the problem is, John?" And I said, "What?" And she says, "Life causes death." And I'm just, you know, I've decided that I'm going to just go through whatever happens and make my choices in peace with whatever it is that's coming. But I look at what we're doing, and I'm surprised that we've gotten this far. I just hope that whatever 2012 brings, that maybe we get through it. And,
because if you look at some of the commercials on TV, they tell you you don't have to pay any interest until 2013. So obviously we're going to make it through 2012 because they want to collect their money in 2013.
Well, you know what will happen? They'll just it'll be in the other world, so we'll all actually perish in this one, and then we'll have to say, hey, we could do the other side.
Okay. That could be pretty good, too. There's a little toll gate there, and you just put your quarters in as you go, and if you don't have any quarters, well, I guess you're just going to have to stay here and be destroyed with the rest of the world. And if you have your quarters or they're your little tokens, you just put it in, the gate swivels around, and then you go.
I don't know. I just watch what's going on, and I do think, though, that with all of this 2012 talk, I think that there is going to be some sort of reaction or collection of things that happen that do impact us in some way that's going to be pretty profound. You're talking about the garbage, you know, the accumulations of garbage. I'm looking at the sheer increase in earthquake activity around population centers, which seems to be profound. I mean, look at what's happened in just the first quarter of this year.
Yes, let's look at this. The crust is shifting. The mantle is beginning to shift, and you have to wonder what's making it shift.
Well, you know, plate tectonics are one thing, but, you know, the thing that bothers me is, we've had, about 100 and some odd years of actual observation within some kind of instrumentation of these events, and we're told that it's not remarkable that, these things happen every day on the planet. But when you're seeing, more and more population centers suddenly getting hit, there's got to be a mechanism at play here somewhere that's beyond just what is explainable science.
And well, the way I look at it is that all the ghosts are getting together and they're getting really ticked off by all these Ghostbusters and everything. And this is their way of letting them know how unhappy they really are.
Huh? You think that because of some lack of sensitivity?
I think that's a lot of it, because from what I can tell, and from what this sounds weird, but I'm not going to worry about it, from what I've heard, a lot of them are getting a little bit disturbed by how people are looking at them or not looking at them, so to speak.
I would agree with that. I mean, the way we do our investigations is we're very, we go in very respectful, and if they don't want us around, okay, I'm good with that. We'll take the message and leave. Others seem pretty communicative, but what we don't like to do is provoke, and that's the thing that I think is probably the most disturbing pattern I see in paranormal investigation today is the provoking part. And
there's a lot of provoking, and a lot of them says, I feel like they tell me I have to hit a door, I have to knock, I have to whisper, and it's not like we go into their world and tell them to jump through hoops for us.
You're right. You did right.
And I'm listening to this chatter, because it's mostly in the evenings when you're trying to go to sleep. That's because your mind is, well, mine is free. I don't have my everyday activities keeping it. And you have to understand, all they want is a little respect. That sounds crazy, but at the same time, you watch all these different paranormal groups, and there are tons of them now. Before, there were very few of them, and then all of a sudden, it seems like everybody and their uncle are out there trying to prove or disprove the theories of ghosts. And I know that a lot of them are not real happy about some of the techniques these guys use.
Yeah, I look at it, and I'm amazed at some of the things that go on, and it's funny. I mean, the thing that we noticed in our work here, where I'm at here in Northern California, is that the number of requests for, being helped to cross over were very notable. And at one point in one of our team meetings, it came down to, the point was made, kind of by all of us almost at the same time, was that, we already know this stuff is real, so what do we do next as a team? And we decided to start looking at when the requests would come in from the other side for these earthbound spirits, we'd help them cross over. And that seems to be a kind of our mission as a team. It's one thing that, when we get a call to go in and look at this particular site and, there's a report, we go in and evaluate it and say, yes, there's something here, or no, there's, it's explainable. More often than not, we do find there's something to it. An awful lot of it is just residual energies and things like that, that we can say, well, it's not an intelligent haunt. But there are those, though, that, we get these very heartfelt requests for assistance. And so some of them are looking for assistance. And, the ones that are happy here and want to stay, I'm not going to go command them to jump through a hoop or do what we wish, but you're exactly right, William. I mean, it's just wrong to go in there and it's like walking into their, you know, somebody walk into your house and then tell you what to do.
Or to determine that because you are hostile or you scatter a few plates on the floor that you're evil. And I just kind of liken it to they're throwing a tantrum.
You know, that's funny because in January, not long after our last interview, we went down to a case in Stockton, California, and we just had the reveal for this. And the host who was taking us through was actually attacked. And what we thought was an attack at first, and you know, I call it an attack, it seemed that way at the time. But we actually heard, I actually heard this guy, I do like you do, I actually hear them quite a bit. And I heard this, and I actually have the whole thing on tape. And we, 10 seconds later, after I'm insisting, and some of my team actually kind of made fun of me about it, and then right, the very person who was making fun of all this, we had our host next to her, and he was actually hit and knocked down. And we had feet prints and actually a handprint on him where this MD actually knocked him down. Well, when we ran the analysis of the tape, it was actually a request for help. He was actually begging us to get him out of there. And you're exactly right. I mean, what appears to be hostility is often a cry for help.
And since most people, I often wonder if there should be universities or accredited classes for people to take in learning how to deal with the phenomena around them rather than just taking it upon themselves that they know all and therefore that qualifies them to go out into a place where there are supposed to be hauntings or there's unusual activity or unexplained activity and go out and do it. Because sometimes it's like a jack-in-a-box. You can let it out, but sometimes you can't let it, you can't put it back in. And a lot of this is because people, I do believe, really don't know what they're doing. So either they base it on books that they pick up from the library or from the bookstores, which can be very misleading, very dangerous, actually, and or something that they had an experience as a child, so that qualifies them to go out and start messing with it.
Yeah, I would agree.
And I sometimes wonder whether there should be courses in which you need to go in as a junior classman, if you want to put it that way, or a freshman, and work your way up the levels to learn how to deal with this. I mean, there are a lot of psychics out there now. There are a lot of mediums, and they're telling you this and they're telling you that, and some of them are quite famous and make scads of money. But what determines whether or not they're really good at what they're doing, and that some of the things they're doing may be just as scandalous as somebody who's fresh off the boat, so to speak, and has gone out and bought the equipment to go and see whether or not they can hunt somebody up or hunt somebody down.
I agree with you. I look at it, you know, I mean, I got into this 4 years ago after, you know, kind of a lifetime of seeing and hearing things, and I didn't know a lot. I learned, you know, some tough lessons the hard way about, you know, a few things that I shouldn't have done. But, you know, there's no really good school out there. There's a few of them out there that claim that have years of claiming to train paranormal investigators. But I think it's a kind of a mixed bag because it's easy to teach the technical skills. That's the easy part. But what I'm finding are the spiritual skills are often lacking.
Yeah.
And an understanding of actually what these phenomena really are from a just from a science perspective of the physics involved, why these things can happen. You need a kind of a balanced, you know, circle of those sorts of understandings to be able to come at it and see it for what it is and then know if you want to engage that or not. And
yeah.
I think that's where, you know, we've been really talking about that with this team. And, you know, we've got a couple of satellite groups that are, you know, working with us, and we're looking at all of that, exactly what you're talking about. You know, we don't take money for what we do. That's not what motivates us. We're trying to help, and we're trying to be respectful. And our intention is, we've been looking at it from the perspective of, here are all the shows that are popular right now. Well, you know, 5 years from now, that's not going to be the case. You know, when this is, the fad is going to wear off and people are going to move on to some other form of, you know, if you will, entertainment. And, you know, we want to be here for the long haul, you know, because we love this. This is a passion for us and what we do. And I think that that's, I think what's going to happen is a lot of this is going to fall away. And, but, you know.
I think you're right. I know that there are journeys that one can take. And one that you start learning, and you know, for people who want to become shamans or spiritualists, there are certain beginnings you have to learn, and then you do. You take, if you want to call it, courses or learning on the job type thing, but you really are learning how to handle these kind of things. So you have, you find out about it, and you become more one with this world in which you're entering into. Than just banging down the door and saying, "Here I am, watch out."
Yeah.
And because I think you're right. I mean, spiritualism hasn't gone away. It comes in waves. And right now it's a real popular type of thing to have. But I just wonder how well prepared people are for when they go out, because they seem to feel that just because they do one thing that entitles them to go in and they'll be successful in handling other things. And yet I always get a sense that something's not quite right, that things have been turned askew, so you really haven't solved anything. You really haven't reached out. And while these people may have had their individual experiences and things like that, they really don't seem to be, they really haven't done anything to set the matter at rest.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, by and large, most of these groups come in and, for example, they'll do an investigation. They'll come in and make the determination. They leave, and things are worse than when they first started.
Exactly. And it's just not the people who are living within this dwelling are either left with some very unhappy spirits who before were maybe willing to work with them and now they're on the war path, or the spirits were already on the war path and now they've been antagonized.
That's right. I mean, we had a case in Auburn, California, just one ridge over from here, where there's a mini mall that we investigated, and I got in there and looked and went, "No, nah, there's no way this place is haunted," and got in there, and sure enough, we had some pretty interesting interactions. And it seemed, when we went in respectfully, we found out that they were, you know, these entities were actually willing to engage with us, and we had some interesting communications and had on-command responses to K2. We'd ask questions, and it would respond yes or no. And so, you know, we've been pushing to go back. We're going to do our reveal here real soon. This is in March, and a little delayed getting back, but we're going to go back there. And we did get the response back that the activities picked up a bit. And I was worried right then because I thought, oh, my God, did we kick something off here? Do we need to get back in there and, you know, try to make, you know, did we tick something off, or was there a problem? And it doesn't seem to be that case. It's just that they are making their presence known a little more now that they've been taken seriously. And I think what we have here is a case of these entities were actually just trying to get it across that they were there, you know. So it's just, you know, the part of the paranormal world does want us to know they exist. And, you know, we're seeing that again and again in the cases we do. There is this awareness that we know about them now, and they do want to engage in some areas. Other places, they want their privacy. And I think it's just like, you know, having a city commons where, sure, things can be, you know, we can have these phenomena and experiences and both sides can meet up. And then there's places they want to go and be alone, and maybe we don't need to be there.
Well, I think sometimes that they need their down time as well, where they need to let their hair down. They need to go back and do what they do or to feel comfortable with what they're doing. And they really don't like having the intrusions. Because what they chose to stay here, so what is within their choice, it's sometimes private. And they don't want you to come in and intrude upon their privacy. And we're not talking, ladies and gentlemen, about the evil things that are out there, because they'll just run all over you and you shouldn't even go there.
Yes. Speaking of that, I mean, what's your experience, what's your experience and thoughts on that between the good and evil entities out there? I mean, what do you think about all that?
I have not encountered really evil entities. Maybe I'm just lucky, but I also don't go where I think I'm not wanted or try things that I have no training in. I don't use the pentagram. I don't get started. I've had too many friends who have used them, and the results have been rather disastrous after a while. So I don't go somewhere where I feel that I'm going to lose control. I don't use an Ouija board because I know that that really is asking for trouble. I just mostly keep my ears cocked, as they say, and things usually come floating into me. But I don't go out after looking for things. And I guess I don't put myself in positions where I go to, say, haunted houses or castles or places where people have reported black shadows or something, because that's way beyond my realm. I don't have that kind of an experience. And so I don't put myself in a position where I'm going to feel threatened.
Yeah, I tend to agree. There's there are definitely forces out there that I think are not good to get around, and we've had our run-ins with such things as a team. And the thing is, it's funny, I just got talking with my case manager, and she was really looking at kind of amping up the number of cases we were doing. And I said, no, let's hold it down so we do quality work, but and a little less of it, but quality work when we do this work. And she goes, well, don't you want to go in and solve problems for people? And I said, sure, but the problem is we're being led to the cases we should be doing, because we're working with elements of the other side that are working in our best interest. And so we have a partnership with, the people we're working with there who help guide us. And that's what I think is missing in some of these investigation teams, is a purely technical view of things, a clinical view, but not something from the heart. And so, the way GRI is run is from that. We don't, the cases that come to us through various means that, I just kind of know the feel of what the ones we should take and the ones we should avoid. And, if there's anything I can pass on to other teams out there, is that that's, I think, a good way to run things. Trust your heart.
Trust your heart. And also, if your gut is telling you no, then listen to your gut, because you'll know whether you're going to put yourself in a position where it's way over your head. And if that's the case, don't go there. Don't even get started. Tell them, well, you'll need to go find somebody who's more experienced. Know the breadth of your abilities and stay within those guidelines.
Yeah, exactly right.
Don't try to be a hero, because if you don't have the experience, that you don't have the expertise, and you really don't know how to use certain type of things that do come to you, you're putting yourself in more harm. You can say as many proper prayers or preparation before you go in and deal with it, but if you're weak, or you lack self-confidence, or you hesitate, it's all over real fast.
Oh, I agree with that
and,
totally.
And you don't want to leave yourself wide open, because you can bring whatever you leave wide open home with you and transfer it to somebody else, and you don't want to do that. So if it's beyond your experience level, or you just get a bad feeling about it, and trust me, you will get bad feelings if your stomach gets queasy all of a sudden, or you break into a cold sweat, or your palms get sweaty, or you feel faint. Let me tell you something. Your guardian angel is telling you, don't mess here. Let it go.
What?
You don't belong here.
Yeah. That's exactly right. I mean, it's I have walked away from a few cases that I looked at, and I thought, this is out of our realm. And I've got contacts, you know, if you're good, if you're doing the work you should be doing, you've made contacts around in this business. And I've got a few of my own that I can pick up the phone or throw an email out. And when it's out of our realm, we refer it on. And don't be afraid to admit that you can't handle it. It's, you know, we're front-end shock troops is really what we are. We go in and do our business. We got our primary mission, which is helping these lost souls that want the help, that request it. Secondary mission is that we go into places and where there's reports of things going on and people are wanting to know what's going on and coming to some conclusion. And that's pretty much our thing. There are those who do, deal with slightly more, evil or violent forces that, that we would not be comfortable going into. And from a safety perspective, I'm not about to put the team into the middle of anything like that. And I'm not afraid to pull us out if we get into something that we realize, oh, my God, we're ass deep in on a problem here. And so we would back off and then bring someone else in. And that you really need to know your limits and know what you're willing to deal with. And is what you regarded to, and what you said about the bringing things home, I've had it happen to me. And I had to deal with it. And it's not something you really want to have happen. But I think it's a kind of a part of your lesson plan if you're going to do this seriously. You are going to have these experiences, and you have to learn to deal with it and know how to ask for help. And I did do that. So
yes, and you also need a backup plan. And the other thing I would tell people is that if you're really interested in doing something like this, go and do your research first on the different groups that are out there, because different people have different plans. And you have to find a group that you're going to feel comfortable with, and you work as a team. You're not being delegated to. Once somebody starts delegating to, let me tell you something, they'll put you in the position that they don't want themselves to be exposed to, which means that they may offer you as the sacrifice.
Yep. That's
or
why we
bait. And you don't want that. If you have trouble going to sleep at night because every little sound in the house makes you jumpy, trust me, it gets a lot worse when you come home after being put out there or tethered to a whatever, and you're told to sit there quietly so you can draw whatever is there out. Noises are not going to be the only things that are going to give you bad indigestion.
Yep, and that's why we keep our team small. I dive right in there with the rest of them, and we generally run about a 3 to 4 person investigation set, and it's close up and personal. So, you know, and the teams that are larger, they have their own protocols and ways of doing things, but I would never offer somebody up as bait. That's just not cool. And,
well, I've seen a couple of people do that they say, well, we staked out so-and-so, or this person did that because we knew that was the only way to draw them out. If you have to start resorting to those kind of measures, leave quickly, because there are too many things that can go wrong. Voodoo exists. Whether you believe it or not, voodoo exists. There are bad. Voodoo is a white religion, folks. It's not black magic. But like all good white religions, you can turn it to the black side.
Yep. It's
and you have to be aware of this. A lot of these religions that have come out of Haiti and Jamaica and have come out from the Africa and the people who were slaves when the blacks came, they brought their own tribal religions with them, and they mixed them with Christianity. And some of them, there's nothing wrong with them. It's just a different form of worship. But like anything else, things can be turned inward or evil. And you should be aware of this.
Yep.
So if you see something that you're really curious about, make sure you ask them questions and do your homework first. I've had friends who got involved in the black mass, and they were way over their head.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's we're pretty careful with our investigators, the ones we have that come out, and I'm not about to throw us into a bad situation, but I've seen, groups that go out with 10, 15, 20 people, and they're kind of not really well organized, and they get into situations that I wonder how people, how people can go home and not know they brought something home with them, and do they understand what to do if they did? And I was in one of those groups early on, and I got right out. I mean, I realized this isn't right. I got a chance to see it up close, experience it, and decided no, I can do better for myself. And I always knew that it would be a small team if I did lead one, and it's turned out to be a good decision.
Yeah, I could believe it, because people put too much faith into their scientific equipment, believing that's going to protect them or give them a heads up if something's going to happen. Well, all this scientific equipment, folks, run on what? Batteries. What does that mean? Energy. What does that mean? It means it can go either way, your energy or somebody else's.
That's right. And that's why we have a team. We have somebody who's a designated seer for the night, and a person who feels, and pretty much that's all they do. And we let them kind of throw their senses out there while we do the other work. I kind of back them up with what I do. I sense things. And so there's generally two of us kind of doing that, letting our feelings kind of guide us. And it's played well for us. And so it's not all the technical side. As much as a lot of people would like it to be, it's an art form, and you have to trust instincts, feelings, and then use the equipment as your only to lead you. You're leading. The equipment leads you to conclusions, helps you to understand what you're dealing with. That's the whole point of an investigation, not just to collect evidence. That's nice that we get EVPs. I've got several thousand in my collection, but really, when it gets down to it, what really is happening is you're meeting people, and they just happen to not have bodies. Or you may meet non-human entities who happen to not be viewable.
Who just happen to operate mentally. And the other thing I would like to say, too, is that you'll hear people agreeing to spend a night in a haunted whatever in Europe or whatever, or even down in the South in the Midwest. Don't do it. It's not worth it. You may cut off a lot more than you bargained for. And
yep.
If you have a weak heart, and some people do even though they're not aware of it, or if you are prone to anxiety attacks or whatever, that will not help you at all. I have spoken to one or two people when I was doing some research, and they told me their experiences, and one of them told me bluntly she came out with white hair. Overnight.
Wow.
Because of the fright. Now, I can't have white hair because of chemotherapy, and that's just chemicals being poured into your body for a couple of months. So imagine what, if you're so scared that you could actually have your hair go white on you because you are scared to death. There's a reason why that phrase was coined.
Yep.
Because it can kill you.
Funny, I mean, my dad's stroke, I was pretty much, I had a little bit of gray when I went in. This is 07, and when we got done with all the hospital stuff 3 weeks later, my hair had turned to totally salt and pepper.
Yes.
In a matter of, yeah.
It will do that because your adrenaline is running and everything is going at full blast, so you're aging faster.
Yep.
And so that's what happened. So, I guess the biggest warning I would like to give to your listeners is that please don't take this lightly. It's not a game. And people can get hurt. I mean, I just don't go to sleep at night sometimes because there are a lot of voices talking. That's fine. I can handle that. But if you put yourself in a position where you have not been taught how to handle it, or you don't know how to handle it, or you're going in there to write a horror story, trust me, there are other ways. Use your imagination. It's a wonderful tool. That's why you've got one. Don't go babysitting in a place where you've been told there have been murders or people have been tortured to death, because they're still there. And they reach out in their pain. And if you're there, they'll just latch on to you.
And that's why we do protection work before we go in. And,
yes.
It's very important to do that and to assess yourself and take a look at everybody. That's part of my job is when I get back out, like last night, we were pretty tired, but I was looking at how we were behaving individually. And so as team lead, I assess my own team and then have them look at me, too, and see how I'm doing. It's everybody gets a chance to say, how are we doing? We got out, and we were pretty clear. You know, it was we had definitely, prepared well. But we were tired, we call
it,
I call
it. It takes a lot out of you. It drains you.
Yes, it does.
It drains you a lot.
Well, hey, we have a caller here who would like to ask a question. Do you like answering a couple of questions?
Sure.
Okay, we'll bring him on in. I think we have Jaguar Spirit here, so we're going to go ahead and pop Jaguar in. And let me get the little microphone thing to work. Come on. Hello. Come on, Blog Talk. Work.
I've had so many talk show hosts tell me, due to technical difficulties, I'm thinking, great, I'm the guest. They can't get me on.
Actually, I'm going to reload the page because it's not letting me pop him on, and I've got I'm going to reload. I think it's something to do with Blog. I think he's still out there, and it will not pick it up. I don't know what to make of that. It will not pick up that caller.
Well, I was told by my friend who's an astrologer that something's in retrograde and it won't be good until after May 11th or 12th. And she says
yep.
This affects all the computers and other things. And after some of the harrowing experiences that I've had for the last 2 weeks, I really do believe her.
I it's funny. I'm gonna make a point about that. It is Mercury retrograde, and we've talked at some length about it here on the show. This year is particularly noteworthy because we're having four Mercury retrogrades this year instead of three. And there is something to it, and I've seen this in my own business of communications. There is something going on with this, and I do believe that astrological influences do have a measurable impact on us. Now, by the way, Jaguar, I'm going to hang up on you, and if you could call back in, I'll answer it. So I'm going to hang up your call, and it's just something with Blog Talk tonight. So yeah, go ahead and hang up, and I'll be watching for your area code again. But yeah, there's something. Something to this. I've seen, and I'll say something, there's been some situations arising, and I've been watching not only in my workplace, but even on Blog Talk, it's kind of a microcosm of the world when you're on Blog Talk Radio and you see people interacting, and a lot of strange stuff is going on, and people are kind of at each other a little bit, and sometimes it flies your way, and you go, wow, where'd that come from? And I've just kind of learned,
John, the last three or four times I've been asked to talk on Blog Talk as a guest, they haven't been able to put me on due to technical difficulties. I think you're the first person on Blog Talk of this year that I've been able to get on and be a guest.
Well, I feel honored. You and I are meant to talk to each other anyway.
Yeah, I think so. I've been sending you a lot of emails asking, and have you found out? Can you talk to me about this? Because my sphere with the paranormal, I suspect, is very narrow compared to a lot of other people. I don't really see a lot of other things going in the way the other people involved with the paranormal are. So in my little speck of the world in which I do have contact with, it's fine, but everything else, apparently, I'm blocked. So that's why I keep on writing these emails saying, what can you tell me about orbs?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm having trouble answering any calls right now. It's I don't understand this. I've never seen this happen before. Matter of fact, I'm going to try it on another rig here. I've got my other computer that I might be able to pull this up. It's not working even. Something at Blog Talk's end is really goofed up, guys. It's not that I don't want to have you on. I even tried the 616 caller, and it will not pick up the lines at all, and I don't understand this. I've never seen Blog Talk do this before, so I'm going to assume you and I are meant to be the only ones talking. So I am sorry, Greg.
I guess so. And the listeners want to know, too, don't buy any electronic equipment until after May 10th, because if you do, it's not going to work. And
yep.
As funny as that sounds, when I had one of my computers drop dead last year, I went out to replace it, and my astrologer friend says it's not going to work. And I said, of course it is. And I went and I bought it, and I plugged it in, and it didn't work, so I had to return it. And I did not go back out until the retrograde was off, and she told me it was all clear. Then I went out and bought my new computer. I haven't had any trouble with it since. So mull that over.
I'm going to have Jaguar ask his question on, and I'll just translate it back over. You're right on the money. I mean, it's that's the thing I've seen. I deal with multi-million-dollar computer systems. And deal with all sorts of everything from video streaming systems to radio here on Blog Talk and voiceover work and things like that. And I really make a point of it to try to kind of minimize communications down to just what I need to do during these times. And it's like I did this investigation and I was a little worried about it, but we really did pretty good because we stayed tight and everybody was making sure they were clear. And I mentioned that this would be something to be thinking about when we went out. But what I'm seeing so much of, though, is that people are kind of getting on each other's nerves, and it's just, God, man, and it seems like Mercury retrograde seems to bring out people who bring out issues that are underlying in the surface anyway, and so the veneer comes off, and so it's actually some people see it as a negative time, and if you turn it around, you can actually use this to explore what's really driving people and relationships, and so it's just. Don't take it so hard. That's the thing I'm saying is look at it and go, wow, I didn't know that was there. Let's look into that and try to do something about it and fix it. Maybe I as a host am not coming off the right way, or I'm saying the wrong thing and it's driving somebody crazy, or I could have done that better. And you find out you got on somebody's nerves with something you did or said, or in your own home or with your family. It's a time to do inward reflection, I think, and that seems to be the thing, So Jaguar is saying, John, I'm going to give you my PM. Going to call me on cell phone. I don't know if I can do that right now. I'm going to be challenged as it is with just being able to keep the show going. Oh my God. Anyway, now. Do you think that the astrological influences have a lot of influence like this on us? I mean, you already seem to...
I think so. I think that man is still basically an animal, and the animals certainly are ruled by what goes on in their environment around them, and a lot of their behavior is controlled by what goes on around them. I mean, there's some behavior that they do no matter what. They eat, they hunt. They take care of their young offspring and everything else. But I know that there are other times when there's something going on in the environment, whether the lightning hits the wrong way or it's very muggy out or something, that the animals can get uneasy. And if you watch them long enough, they can react to certain conditions, atmospheric and otherwise, that tells you that something is way off. And I really believe that's true, because I've seen from experience that right before a bad storm, when the sky turns green and yellow, all of a sudden you can't hear anything. The birds are quiet. The crickets are quiet. You can't even hear the grasshoppers. It's total, total quiet. And then you also can sense, well, for example, it's very muggy here. In Ann Arbor, Michigan, there's terrible weather all around us with the tornadoes, and the air is just charged with a lot of energy. And you go outside, and you can feel it.
Yeah,
my
right.
hair can feel it. It's I mean, it looks like, well, it looks pretty bad. I mean, it almost stands straight up in a, on air with all the static that's in the air, so for a thing. So, yeah, I do believe that. I think there is something to do with it. And I think that the mood of what is outside can affect the mood of a person as well. And that's been documented that during the winter, the more dark the days are, the more depressed certain people become. And that's why they need this artificial light on 24/7 to keep them on a more even keel.
As a matter of fact, that is something I have to use. I'm half Scottish Highlander, and I have found that in the winter, I depend on the full spectrum light at work. I'll flip that on in the morning and have get my sunshine that way. And during the darkest part of the season, I go in for a very short burst of UV light in a tanning salon. I'll go in two or three times during just the darkest part of the year, and it really kicks my metabolism up. I feel good for about a week afterward, and so I'll do it during the transition between Christmas to New Year's. I do it at that darkest part of the year. I give myself that extra boost. It lifts me right out of my doldrums, and it really works.
You may also want to paint a room a bright yellow. We have a combination. Oh, I guess, what will you call it? It's not exactly living room, but it's also your dining room and the kitchen is all one really huge room. And in Michigan, yep, during January, February, March, it's pretty nasty around here, and it gets dark for days and days and days. And yep, so I asked my husband, would he mind if we painted that one large room yellow? And he said, sure, not a problem. And we did. And I've got to tell you, it pulled me through this winter.
Wow.
I would just look at the brightness of the walls and felt like I was standing in a bright, sunlit day, with blue sky and a little whimsical white clouds, and I just felt like I was engulfed in white light. I just felt terrific because I can't have UV light on me. It's bad for me. I have systemic lupus, and that and sunlight do not get along real well together. But the yellowness of the walls were just, it was just awesome. I mean, I sailed through this winter, and usually winters for me is a terrible time of year because it gets black and oppressive. But I didn't have that trouble this year. And I think it was because of the brightness of the walls. It was like having a smile on the walls. And no matter how turgid it got outside, I would walk into that room and just feel renewed.
Well, it's funny. I ended up with this little flip light I picked up for about $20. I went out and looked at the expensive models were $700 for these.
Right. Yeah.
Really super fancy ones, and I found this $20 light. And I thought, no way. But what the hell? $20. Let's just see. It turned out to be a really good investment, and I've had to get one bulb since. But the thing works great. You flip it open. I get to work, I throw it on and have my coffee, and it's dark outside, during the worst of the year, and boom, you get your dose and you feel good and it kicks you up, and you kind of miss it. If you're not around it or you forget to use it, you definitely feel the difference. So, the stuff does work. There's something about it, but there's some supporting evidence to what you're talking about. I heard that some prisons were actually doing experiments with colors and prisoners. And they found out that the pink, painting everything pink, drove them crazy, but it also cut the violence down. And actually, some of the prisoners were suing over the fact that they were painting the walls pink.
Well, I think maybe pink is supposed to signify love. And maybe I think it's calming to have a pastel color in your life. I think it's calming to have soft hues surrounding you. Because if you look at a person, you do have white light anyway surrounding you.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
And I think it's just, it makes you feel more at ease, more calm inside.
Do you now, what was it that you had before, with the color that you had before you went to the yellow?
Oh, well, we moved into this house 8 years ago, and it has gray walls.
Oh.
Everything is gray in this house. And for 6 years, we stayed that way until I finally told my husband I'd walk out on him if he didn't do something about the walls. And he said, no, I don't want that to happen. I'll start painting. And I said, thank you. And he started painting. And, in fact, he got half the bedroom painted in a nice kind of purple color. It's very soothing when the sun comes out. It has a really nice, I guess, rosy cheek type thing to it. So it's really very nice. And once he gets the other half of the room, which will be during Christmas vacation again, he'll paint the other half of the room the same color, so it'll all be one, you know, soft kind of a purple. And it just, you just feel better. And that's good for me. I mean, he loves white walls. I mean, he could go into any room, have white walls, and be a happy camper. But I like color in my life.
Well, you know, I'm going to try something, too, just a variation on the theme of what you're saying. I'm going to get a big poster of the sun and then get some light on it to kind of augment what you're talking about. I'm going to do that just so I have the sun right there next to me. I can deal with it. Oh, my God, the giant big mosquito hawk just came flying right by the microphone. Okay.
Oh, well,
hello.
You'll just have to sacrifice it for the good of the... And then we can start talking to the ghost of the mosquito and, you know, find out how it feels about things.
Well, you know, what's funny is I've had more times on here. I live out in the country, so we have all sorts of stuff that goes on. I've walked outside and run into a skunk 1 year. Just missed a little spray there. It's amazing how fast that tail can turn and aim at you. And,
oh, yeah.
It's amazing. You can move when you are motivated to get out of the way of that. I walked out one time and we had a rattlesnake sitting out there, and I've been bit once before, so I moved really quickly to get out of that one. Deer, turkeys, oh God, what else do we have?
Sounds like you have about as many animals as we do. We have, there's a fox, we have a lot of rabbits, we have a lot of deer, we have a lot of turkeys, wild turkeys. We have a lot of turkey vultures. We have a lot of hawks. We had an eagle land one day. We have a stork and a heron.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had the heron. We've got the white herons out here, and I had a nice stock of goldfish in the pond I built, and saw this one come in, and I suddenly had a lot less fish.
Yes, you do that. You do that. Well, what was really freaky the other day, we put some regular goldfish into our pond last year.
Yeah.
And then when we went to inspect the pond, we had the same pod of goldfish come leaping through the water like a dolphin pack, only there weren't little goldfish anymore. They had grown. They looked like koi. But we knew that they were goldfish. And what was really freaky is that all six of them, the three abreast, were kind of cresting over the water, then coming down, and then cresting over the water and coming down the way you see dolphins swim in the open.
Yeah.
And it was really awesome. I mean,
yeah. Ours were like, I just went out and just got the pond cleaned up. We had that storm. We had a terrible, terrible storm in December that caused all sorts of damage. I think I'd interviewed you right about the time, either just after or, a little bit after we had it. And so about 3 weeks ago, we got one of the plum tree that had fallen into my fish pond. It was a huge plum tree, and it took, I had to actually order block and tackle, and no one else could help me, except my mother came out and leaned against the block and tackle rope and just used body weight. I'd tell her, okay, lean against it, and I'd heave up the tree, I got that all put in, and we got the tree. I just got done unsecuring the ropes and have it tied off now, and this tree survived it. Oh, thank God. I love that plum tree. So it's right over my pond. So I've got the pictures. So I'll put pictures up, and I'm serious. I'll get it done this time.
Please do.
Oh, yeah, it's just beautiful. But the fish, I was surprised. It was a very hard winter. We had at one point this December, we had the ice was so thick I couldn't break it in the pond this time. And we're in California. And so I was taking an iron bar and trying to crack it, and I couldn't. And I thought, oh, my God, it froze all the way down. And I figured I wouldn't have any fish. And was just out there the other day. And matter of fact, I have the video on our YouTube channel. You'll actually get to see it. It's out there on our Ghost Rider YouTube channel, and you do see the fish. I forgot I put that out there. So you know, they survived it. But how big is your pond? I mean, you know, because
it's a really huge pond. I mean, we can blow up our inflatable canoe and paddle all over it.
Oh, you actually can, you know, yeah. Mine's like 10 feet across. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we also have a little pond in a plastic, you know, container. We have Mr. Froggy, as we put it, and the water comes spatting out of the frog's mouth, and all the birds go into the little pool and take their bird baths.
That's what we have. This was actually a duck pond when we first, built this ranch. About a year or two after we built it, my dad and I put rebar in and created this duck pond, and for a while we've been raising birds and things like that. Well, it fell into disuse, and eventually, you know, after all these years, it was the concrete was rotting away, and I went in and did patching, and then I put a rubber liner in after I put carpet down, and I laid a rubber liner in, and then filled the thing back up and put in all sorts of nice plants, and so now it looks like it's just a natural feature, and I've been surprised. I've got frogs that have moved in. We've had the herons drop by, killing, and eating whatever they could get out of the pond. And we have the most beautiful flowers now that come out of it. So it's really a beautiful sight. And it's just amazing what you can do when you put a little back to nature and just kind of let nature take her course.
Yes.
I like that.
We have tons of tadpoles this year. I mean, every time you walk around that pond, you see about a couple of hundred, dash into the deeper part of the water. We also have a large turtle as well. We saw his foot come out one time, this broad foot. So there are a lot of things in the pond that we have in there that we're not quite sure what's in there, and we have a tendency to stand in the shore, shut your eyes, and go,
Well, it's funny. I'm sitting here. I just did some experiments with wireless audio, and what I was going to do is kind of do a combination thing. For part of the show, I'm actually going to have the wireless hanging right over by the pond and pipe some audio in from that occasionally, just as an audio feed.
Mm-hmm.
It makes a great random noise source for EVP work. And I do on-air EVP now. I've been, since I got, had you last on, we've kind of gone into, I've done a lot of on-air readings, and I'm working with a group on the other side that seems to really like what we're doing. And we help people with that. And it's funny, you find these natural sources, natural noises, seem to really bring it out. And so I'm just going to go ahead and do that just for ducks. And I tested it out the other day, and it worked really well. So for all of you listening in the audience, it's going to be great. You'll hear the frogs and everybody chirping and cricketing and things jumping around in the pond. And it's going to be kind of cool. So
I think it will be very neat because we have a couple of ducks who have laid their eggs on our rushes, and we have a couple of geese that have also done the same thing. And we have a lot of other things that do come in during the night, I gather, to drink from the pond. So I suspect if anybody ever put a video cam out there on the willows to track what comes in to visit that pond during the night, that we would have our own beginnings of a National Geographic going on.
I would agree with you there, yeah. And especially with the size of the ponds you have, I mean, that's got to be
very large. The original people really built a large, large pond, and then for some strange reason, the people who owned the place before us put something in the water and killed off all the fish. So when we came, when we bought the property and stuff, we had to restock it.
Oh, my. I wonder if it had a parasite or something, you know. Some people, you know, we see that out here is people get tired of having catfish and stuff, and or they'll just not like what they have in there, and they'll go off and do it in. And I think the state's kind of coming down on that now a bit, but I have seen some of the ponds here, though, have just huge catfish out here, and they just become, you know, enormous predators in there. So maybe that's part of the reason. But
That may be. I don't know. We saw this year that we have graveyards of, what are they called? Not crab. Crayfish. And some of them have gotten to be very large, but for whatever the reason, there's a lot of parts where you can see the dead skeletons of all the crayfish that have died. And it looks like a crayfish cemetery in parts of the pond that
you can keep
down to the bottom. Yeah.
Well, you could also have them for, in lieu of a lobster dinner.
No, cholesterol, you know. But they do make good, and so we have also a lot of snails as well. Freshwater snails, yeah.
No, I don't have any of those. I've just got
I would send you some, but I'm afraid they'd be dead on arrival, so that wouldn't. Well,
yeah, actually, you know.
Put them in a plastic bag and a little bit of water?
Yeah. Well, I've got a pond next door that, it's just about 800 feet off, off on the other side of the property. I could, and I think that's where some of my other unexpected guests have showed up from. We did pick off a bunch of the snails that came with some of the plants we had, because I didn't, there was some, and there was this duckweed, and we've been really jealously guarding against duckweed. And so, I've kept it pretty clear. But, maybe some snails would be good because I think they eat up a lot of the algae, right?
Yeah, they do. And you'd want to keep the algae at a very low level because they will suffocate your creatures.
Yeah.
And too much algae gets in. I've seen a lot of large ponds here out in Michigan. And if they're not taken care of, not just ponds, little small lakes, too. The algae comes in, and it will suffocate the fish life and the stuff that lives in the water because there's no oxygen that can come through.
Well, I'll tell you this much. I didn't realize how beautiful it would get. This year, it really came into its own. This is the third year I've had it. And I've got forget-me-nots all planted around it now, and they've matured. And that's all coming up. And then there's also, I put in a whole section of self-seeding wildflowers that come back year after year. So it's going to really be beautiful this year. And, I'm a bit of a gardener. I'm sorry we're going off
paranormal.
That's
okay. We're gardeners, too. I was going to tell you that if you find some cattails growing wild, dig them up and replant them in your pond, and they will take root and spread.
Wow.
Because that's what we did. There were no cattails, so the pond was just bare all the way around. So we found some cattails. My husband, Barry, dug them up, replanted them in the pond, on the edge of the pond, and now they've taken over two-thirds of the perimeter of the pond.
Wow.
They're just great because you get dragonflies and all kinds of birds come in through, and then of course you can also cut them in the fall and bring them into the house and let them dry, and they're just very, very nice. You can also make you can use them to weave with too, but there's a proper way of letting them dry out and stuff.
Well, several different varieties. I've got some Egyptian plants, and I'm not remembering the name. I go to remember it on air, and I can't remember right off the bat. But I've got these beautiful flowers that come up in the summertime, and they're kind of a big, flat, floating leaf, and the name escapes me right off the bat. I got those, and I've got another tall cattail type of plant that is there, but I think I've got enough room I could do that, and I know just the place to go to get them. They grow everywhere all across North America. You know,
yeah, they do. So. Just watch out for water snakes, but if you, you know, dig it up so the roots come out and stuff and put them right in that way, they should do very well, because we did not go out and buy any of the plants. We just found them wild, dug them out, and brought them back. And, of course, I don't have to tell you they make good eating as well. But the bulbs.
Yeah, I've heard they're good. Yeah, I've heard the roots are good to eat. You know, especially during the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can actually just cook them and put them in with different foods, things like that.
Yep. Same thing with ferns. If you get them when they first come up in the spring, they're called fiddleheads, and they're delicious.
Yeah. I've seen references to those. So, you know, I'm going to give that a whirl. I know just the place to go. I'll try to see if I can put a video of me out getting into the mud with my bare feet pulling up cattail.
Well, just make sure you wear, you know, boots that come up to your chest, and put on your special rubber pants, and you should be just fine.
Okay. Well, you know what? We've gone on all about all this stuff, and I forgot to bring up your writing and everything else. We went into everything this time. It's like talking old home week with you.
I know. I enjoy talking with you a lot, too, John. And I really think that we're very similar spirits and that our souls talk to each other. So it doesn't really surprise me.
I think you're going to be back, right?
Oh, absolutely. If nothing else, you have to hear about my Mesoamerican book that's called Vampire Turf War. So.
Okay. I'm going to put that down. I'll tell you what, how about we have you back? You going to be around in June?
Yes, I'll be around in June.
Okay, tell you what, I'm making a note right here, and I'll put it on right after the show. I'll go look up the next available date, and you got it. So
okay,
we'll talk some more about it.
Because all kinds of things happen to me in between.
Oh, really? Yeah, stuff's happened since we host had you on, I'll bet.
Well, yeah. I've been doing some research, as I told you, about the Mesoamericans and everything. I've had one or two experiences that sort of, you know, laid my eyeballs back in my head a little bit, but what can I say?
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. Let's make it the topic for that, and I've got some, I'm actually ordering some books on the Maya, you know, on the Mayan civilization, so I think we're going to have that'll be our theme. Let's go ahead and do that. So,
sounds really good. In fact, they had a program, I guess a couple of weeks ago, where the Mayans traveled about 800-900 miles to sacrifice some children in a dead volcano. And they found the mummies of these three kids. And where they were buried and everything, their bodies are as fresh as the day they died.
Oh, my God.
Yes, I have to keep them in very sealed units so they do not deteriorate from what's going on in today's fog and deterioration and germs and everything else like that. And they determined that they were sacrificed to appease the gods, to bring better weather so they could grow their crops, and that kids were kept alive. One was 16, one was about 8, and the other one was about 5 or 6. And it was two girls and a boy, and it was like incredible. The hair was just the way you would imagine hair to be on a live child.
Wow.
Yes.
I think, okay, we will talk about that and more coming up on the next show then. And we got about 1 minute remaining. I did post your links. I've got the lilliancaldwell.homestead.com site. Is that the correct one?
That's just lilliancaldwell.com.
Okay, got that. Let me actually post that. And there's also the Anime Mysteries. Which, are you still writing more on that series?
Oh, yes.
There?
Oh, yes. That's getting to be a very big thing. There's a lot of things coming out about that by the end of May, the beginning of June. There's a lot of movement going on. I finished the second book. I just have to find a publisher for it. The second book is called The Anime Mysteries, The Seven Keys of Solomon.
Okay. Well, with that, we're almost out of time. We've got 20 seconds, so... just want to thank you for coming on, and God bless, and we will see you again real soon, Lillian.
Okay. Thanks a lot for having me on, John. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks a lot. God bless. And to all our audience, and sorry I don't get to do the call out. We did a long interview this time, so this is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio. We'll be signing off, and I'm going to try to read it real fast here. We have Kestrel, After Dark Radio, Anastasia 1, Kathy's Distant Echoes, Dominica, I'm not going to make it, Elizabeth Rose, Hamill Rose, Fire Witch. Oh, my God, I ran out of time. See you guys later. Talk to you.